Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. This is our opportunity to catch up with the world of technology and share what we've learned or what we're struggling with. And we're always keen to hear from you. And you can do that by writing to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Traditional emails and your voice notes, all very welcome. Don't forget, of course, you can first catch Tech Talk here on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 1 p.m. You can hear us again Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. and we are available as a podcast each Friday. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing from the accessibility team at Avanti West Coast, who will be giving us an update about the passenger assistance trial and answering some listener questions. We'll also be hearing more about Monarch, the multi-line and tactile graphics display from Humanware, and we'll be answering some of your listener emails. So stick around, it's another Tech Talk. Welcome in, my co-host this week is Callum Stoneman, back from your hollybobs. Callum, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, yeah. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back as well. What's on your technology radar just now?
Well, because of where we were, we had very limited internet coverage and phone signal, so I've had a bit of a tech switch off for the last couple of weeks, to be honest. I'm still sort of catching up with things, but this Design for Every Gamer campaign has really got my attention lately. Obviously, I was aware when we covered this on the show, but I just find it really interesting and I hope that some good can come of this. You know, I'm not much of a gamer at all. I'll have a bit of a play around on Dice World maybe if I've got a bit of time to kill, but that's about it. And I think it's because that as soon as a new game comes out and there's a new trend that everyone's talking about, you know, and it's a video game, I instantly just dismiss it. I just sort of go, that's not going to be accessible. But we had the Accessible Gaming Symposium last year and then this Design for Every Gamer campaign. I think that's starting to change now. So hopefully that's something that we can now get more involved in.
A few years ago, I went on a cruise with my wife and I was very surprised to discover that in the programme to keep everybody entertained were a number of presentations concerned with technology. And these were things like how to edit photographs on your iPad or even how to use Microsoft Excel. I couldn't believe it. And I have to confess, I might have popped along to one or two of them. I think my wife thought I was crackers. So have you ever stumbled across technology training or technology in an unusual setting? It'd be great to hear about that. The other little discovery I had as well recently, Callum Stoneman, I use, as well as the RNIB Talking Book Library through the Easy Reader app, I also use Audible, the premium audiobook service from Amazon. And Audible now offers access to a range of podcasts completely free of charge, including our very own RNIB Tech Talk. How about that?
Oh, so we're on Audible.
So you can speed it up and skip forward and all that stuff. So, yeah, let us know. Where do you listen to the show? That would be good to hear. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Stoneman, welcome back to Tech Talk. Accessible travel and transport is hugely important for blind and partially sighted people, whether we need it for employment, education, or even to just visit friends and family. One company that's been busily working hard in this area is Avanti West Coast. We spoke with Martin Byrne and Ricky West from Avanti West Coast back in February. You may remember when Avanti were launching a trial of an onboard passenger assistance service. Well, I thought it'd be great to invite Martin and Ricky back onto Tech Talk and Connect Radio to find out how the trial is going and talk about accessible travel and transport more generally. So, gentlemen, welcome back. Great to have you back here on RNIB Connect Radio. Let's start with the trial then. This was a service that you were piloting to enable passengers aboard an Avanti West Coast train to contact human support in the event that they were unable to locate the train manager or a seat or having some other kind of problem. I understand that the trial has gone live. It'd be great to hear, how's that going?
Hi, so I'm Ricky, and the trial went live on the 22nd of February, and we've had a lot of interactions with people. We've had very different questions asked. So we've had people come through from that have been on board, and I've got a little bit of a scenario that I can talk about shortly. And also we've got staff members messaging us and asking us for help and support. One of the biggest highlights I'd say that me and Martin have had when we were working together was a VI gentleman got in touch with us and said that he couldn't find assistance, but the train had already left the station. So that meant the person was overcarried, which means that the person missed his station. And unfortunately, that was a direct train that was heading towards London. So that meant there was no extra stops on the journey. So he reached out via the Travel Companion service, spoke to Martin, and I managed to, while Martin was helping, I managed to go and speak to our control centre. And they managed to add in an extra stop and get the passenger off board. And then the train manager was able to guide them to where they needed help and support to get on the next train to go in the opposite direction, which meant this saved that person travelling an extra 4 hours potentially of a turnaround to London. So that is one live scenario. So that was happening live where we managed to step in and help, and our control centre were able to actually add in an extra stop on that journey when potentially that person would have had to have travelled to London.
Martin, what's been your experience so far with the trial? That's a great anecdote, Ricky. Is that sort of thing happening weekly, daily? Are many people using the service at the moment?
Well, the positive thing of that, Dave, it's not happening daily, which I think is a great testament that people are actually getting on the service correctly and it's working correctly. We've had small pockets of issues where we've stepped in and supported those instances. But a majority of comms and communication we've had with passengers around planning, around fears and worries around travelling on the trains. And I think we sort of tried to give them confidence, and I think it's presented people with a little bit of a safety net where we're there to listen and understand their fears and concerns whilst travelling. And it's been a lot of reaching out, just saying hi, popping in their phone sort of as a need to contact more than actually being a necessity. So it's double faceted in terms of it's been positive. People are proactively connecting with us, but second of all, we are there if and when needed as well.
And to either of you then, how does Avanti measure the success of a trial like this? Is it about qualitative outcomes like the one that Ricky described, where the passenger didn't have to travel an extra 4 hours? Or is it more a quantitative thing about numbers of people engaging?
Our prime focus here, it's actually about improving customers' journeys. We will be measuring on the results on that interaction with passengers and the outcome of those passenger interactions. We've not been given a numeric value to sort of reach towards, because it is there as an assistance rather than sort of a KPI or a targeted service. It's about an assistance service.
Okay. And Ricky, is the trial still running? Is there an end date? And is this a service that you expect to offer long term?
So the trial is still ongoing, and it's due to naturally not come to an end, but be assessed around the end of April time, just to see what's worked well, to understand where people have reached out and asked for help. But it's still live and active at the moment till end of April, and we'll obviously update as time moves on. And I want to say, just to a numbers point, we've had 209 people come through and ask for assistance in very different ways. So that, as Martin said, was, there's not a KPI as such, there's not a number that we need to have, but we are helping with a range of different information, and it's an avenue that where we're giving advice and a service. So it may not always be on board, but it is also prior to the journey.
Martin, do you think this is something that Avanti might offer long term?
I believe there's certainly an underlying feeling that we need to continue this service. It doesn't mean we have the green light to do so. We have to go through an appraisal process of any trial. But there's been no negativity or sort of negative aspect of this service being implemented full time. And I think from a commercial perspective, Avanti have committed some finance towards bringing myself and Ricky and our expertise into the organisation to improve on accessible travel. So it would be counterintuitive to think we wouldn't continue in some sort of form this sort of deliverable.
Let's talk about that. And obviously, keep us posted about the trial and whether this leads to an ongoing service. You mentioned there that Avanti have obviously invested in blind and partially sighted people, bringing you guys on board. See what I did? Anyway, you used to work at RNIB, and obviously Avanti have recruited you, and they want blind and partially sighted people ourselves to have a voice. What's the experience been like for both of you chaps, you know, getting to know Avanti's systems? Ricky mentioned off-air before we started that some of the acronyms were quite new and there was a bit of a learning curve there. What's the experience been like thinking about technology specifically? How have you got to grips with working for a mainstream travel operator like Avanti?
I think there's quite a slightly different stories to both mine and Ricky's employment background. So I've worked in the commercial world for quite some years. Around 18 years I worked in the commercial world, and I made a decision around 5 years ago to step into sort of the sight loss sector and accessibility world because of my lived experience. I wanted to share my knowledge and experience working in that environment to move into this space. So I've worked in the commercial world, and there are a lot of good organisations there willing and helpful in bringing people with sight loss into their employment. I think my experience of always being is just be open and honest and tell them what challenges you have. And most people nowadays have the acceptance they can support you in whatever role Sue sits. Now, we are working in a rail sector, so you can imagine we are governed by safety. So there's sort of elements of our role where we can't do a dispatch or on platform services because there is a safety element. But certainly working within our head office operations, any role is supported through Avanti.
Ricky, what's it been like for you?
It's been really good. So right from my interview stage, throughout my induction and throughout any training, there's always been the question there of what else would I need or require to make it more accessible or reasonable adjustments. So that when it comes to equipment or for technology that I've needed to use within my role and the many different sort of services that we have to use within the role, the different systems, they are accessible thanks to either standard magnification software or built-in voice software as well that can read things back to me. And there's always been support there. It's been always at the forefront asking, is everything accessible to me? And I haven't come across any barriers, which has been really helpful because, as Martin said, for myself, this is the first time stepping into a corporate world, which is very sort of different to the charity sector. So I found it very welcoming to have the level of support there from everyone and having access to accessible equipment that I will need, such as monitors, different devices, so preferred platforms to use, and then also the help and support when it comes through to training.
Would you recommend travel and transport as an industry where blind and partially sighted people could get gainful employment?
Definitely so. As Martin said there, there's some roles within the business that you cannot do for obvious reasons around safety, and you want everyone to feel safe. But for me, working where I work in the office and at home, there's many different roles that you could take part in and be involved in. And as I said, if everyone has felt as welcome as I have, it's a fun and enjoyable place to work.
Well, that's good to hear. So thinking about access to transport more generally, we've heard from a listener, Barry Lane, who was concerned about the Avanti website and app. Let's hear from Barry now.
I have had problems with the Avanti app. It wasn't accessible at all, so I reached out to Avanti to make that more accessible, which I got a response to advise that their accessibility manager said it was accessible. So I went through quite a long process. So I did quite a bit of background research on what should be accessible and what it should be able to do. So I looked at the guidelines and I created a screen video and sent it to Avanti, who then responded to state that actually the app was not accessible. So they then wrote back to admit that there was a problem and said that they would update it. So I thought at that point, well, if the app, I can't buy through the app, then I'll go to the website. So because they advised me that the website's accessible. So I went onto the website. I wasn't able to book through the website either. So therefore I had to phone to buy tickets, which took several hours at the time.
Can you comment about the accessibility of your app or website?
I think there's a recognition that we're continually making improvements on all platforms. And I think we distinguish between the two platforms we operate within, certainly the web platform and the app platform. Today, our web application is monitored monthly through the Shaw Trust. And we have obviously an up-to-date accreditation for all accessibility features within that WCAG and such.
Right, so you accept that there are currently issues with the app. How about the website then? I think the listener's concern was that the date picker specifically was problematic with screen readers.
I'm not aware of it firsthand, and that's what I'm keen to pick that message up and sort of dig deeper into that. Myself and Ricky are here to listen to those challenges and work with our internal web teams to sort of develop on that. But like I said, I've not had direct feedback on that issue from any VIP passengers at the point. So I'm not saying it's not there, David.
Barry also talked a bit about raising a complaint and what happened next.
Yeah, well, they acknowledged it up until this was back in the summer of 2021.
Okay.
So a year and a half ago. So and contacted them to say, you know, there is an issue here for someone who's blind who's a screen reader user. So and they kind of acknowledged it, but didn't actually ever come back to me. So I then became more frustrated by it. So I then raised a letter of discrimination, because obviously the website should be accessible under the Equality Act. So I wrote a letter to their CEO and to highlight the problems. And that's when I started getting regular correspondence from them. So I wrote to them and they wrote back to say that their accessibility manager advised that the website and app were accessible and met the WCAG AA guidelines, which was really frustrating because obviously I know what I was experiencing. So I then wrote back with detailed information as to what guidelines it wasn't meeting and provided a screen video. So on an iPhone, you can take a recording of your what you're experiencing on your phone and it will save it into your photos library. So then I did that with their app and sent that off. So I got response then to say that they admitted there was a problem with the app, but again, the website was accessible. So I'm like, well, it's not. So you need to go back to your accessibility manager and say, you know, there is a problem here. So it went back and forth a few times. And then they did then, this was back in December 2021, they advised that the app would get funding for that, and that would be updated in the April of 2022. But the website they claimed was accessible. So that was the last contact I really had with Avanti. I then reached out to the RNIB to ask if they could help me with progressing this further, because obviously this isn't really acceptable. So, and then they came on board and did a couple of accessibility audits for me to check that, you know, that, I mean, I'm not an accessibility professional. I've done a bit of research, but I'm no professional on this. And so I asked if they could have a look, and they certainly did. And in June 2022, they did a brief report that stated that the website and app were both not accessible and needed updating. But my work commitments have meant that, you know, I haven't been able to chase this up or spend more and more hours chasing this up and trying to, you know, get them in, you know, trying to ask them to make their website accessible further, really.
Are you aware of that? And what sort of response would you expect to happen in that kind of situation?
It's very difficult, David, without looking at specific examples. But I've reached out to Brandon Pete, our accessibility manager for Avanti. He's got a roadmap certainly for improvements throughout the platforms. His sharing knowledge is it should be well within our remit to make modifications in the near future. Hard to give a hard timeline because it involves a lot of moving parts. But we'd love, and he'd love to be in contact with that person and have a conversation.
Obviously, you can buy Avanti tickets from third parties. Sometimes there's a fee with that. So ideally, one of the benefits of purchasing a ticket from you directly is, of course, it would be slightly cheaper because you would avoid paying that fee. Can you understand why somebody might want to buy a ticket directly rather than going through a third party?
Yeah, of course, I understand why. I mean, we've got Club Avanti now live as well, which has other fringe benefits. So I 100% understand why people are driving towards using the platform to buy their tickets out themselves. And I will continue to promote the service through Avanti. I think it's the website is functionality in terms of working. And like I said, this is the first we've heard of this issue. But in speaking to other groups in the sector that are using our website successfully, so I'd love to hear a little bit more about that individual's challenge to see if we can drive down and figure out what the issue is there.
I think it was the date picker specifically on the website. I had a go with a screen reader trying to book a ticket using the website, and the issue that I found was there didn't seem to be a way for my screen reader to select the date of travel. Now, that was a couple of weeks ago when I last tried it. I'm aware that these things change quickly, perhaps. While a certification can be valuable to demonstrate that a website has passed certain automated checks, to what extent does a certificate really tell you about the customer experience, what actually happens for a blind person when they try to use that facility?
No, I agree with you, David. I mean, a certification is, I class that as a baseline, and fundamentally we always try and drive above that. We have an accessibility panel. We welcome individuals to join that forum, and they are fully engaged in any changes we bring forward to the operation, whether that be web-based, training, even train development with new trains on board. So everything goes through that accessibility panel, and there's a mixed team of people with accessibility needs from VI, disabilities and things like that. So it is run across those panels to sort of sanity check anything we do. So by all means, we're happy to go away and look at that date picker issue. And I'm surprised neither myself or Ricky have come across this yet. And that's sort of why it's a little bit of a shock to us. But we're keen to look at how we can make that work for people, because it's definitely an issue, 100%.
I guess we are where we are. We can't change what's happened in the past. You both sound very committed to improving accessibility across the board in terms of the app and the website. What specific assurances can we offer listeners today? What can we look forward to in terms of accessibility on the website and the app? Martin, let's come to you first.
In terms of reassurances, I think you'll know you've got somebody internally shouting the corner of the VI community, with both me and Ricky at the forefront of that. Challenging in terms of to give you time frames, that's harder to do so. We work in quite a large, multifaceted business that has many moving parts, but we are now part of that team that's working on these accessibility projects. We're bringing into the conversations around new trains, we're brought into the conversations around community events, we're looking at things like the International Blind Sports Championships in Birmingham, how we can support that. These are the conversations we're involving ourselves in to see how we can better improve our service to that environment. So we are driving to the ultimate goal of being as accessible as possible, almost to the point where we'll be made redundant, hopefully, but that's talking ourselves out of a job.
With the benefit of me and Martin now coming into the business and having the understanding around the sight loss sector, is that we are here to help. And I think we are a point of contact as well. So we want people to know that we are here to feedback information too. And we can, from the inside, we can really prod and ask that question. And also for myself, being a sort of a user of voiceover or talkback systems, I can test and try that, and also screen readers that I've used in the past. And what we would say, as Martin said, is that we have our accessible panels, but also regional panels that people can join. So please do get in contact, and you can either sort of send us a message via social media and we can link you in. You can also sort of contact through the customer service, and we can get you fed into the accessible panels and find the one that's best suited for your region. But also, we do have the accessible travel group for Avanti, and people are asking questions. And as I said, since I've been in the company, I haven't seen any feedback come through on there around it not being able to use it. So it is interesting to hear, but it's always good to take that feedback and make sure that we do prod and ask the question of what is happening. And I would say is the push is through and the multiple different changes the website potentially has with different information when it comes round, with different communications from the rail, from Avanti, with what's happening on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis. We are always trying to make sure that it is accessible for everyone.
If anyone listening is experiencing any accessibility issues with any aspect of Avanti's service, what should they do?
I mean, I was thinking if the Facebook user connect with us on the accessibility Avanti group, that's the quickest and easiest way of getting to speaking to myself, Ricky, and the wider team here. Now, I know not everybody's got Facebook or comfortable using Facebook. However, and what we would love to share with you, David, probably in a couple of days' time, is we are just about to sign off a new accessibility email contact address where people can address us directly via email. We've just not had IT confirm that to us today, which we was hoping to give you that information. But more than happy to share with that maybe for your next go live next week, potentially.
I shall look forward to that. Is there anything else you chaps would like to share at this point?
I think it's just please share with your experiences, because that's how we move forward, by gaining those experiences. And we are here to listen, and we are on the side of the VI community, being VI both ourselves. And we understand people's frustrations when things go wrong, and we understand the hassle it can be. And we're forefront of that. We live it day to day, travelling on the train. So trust me when we say we are passionate about this and trying to make these improvements for everybody.
Brilliant. Well, thanks once again, gentlemen, for coming on. Excited to hear about the progress of the trial. And brilliant to hear that the transport industry is a good place to work for some blind and partially sighted people. And we'll look forward to hearing more about developments in terms of accessibility of your website and app. Ricky West, Martin Byrne from Avanti West Coast, thank you for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We have heard from Elliot in Poole, and Elliot writes, I was just wondering what streaming TVs and streaming devices people thought were most accessible. In my opinion, in Elliot's opinion, the Apple TV is the best streaming device, as most apps tend to work, which on the Amazon Fire Stick and the Google Chromecast, it can be a little bit more hit and miss. Have you found that to be the case, Callum Stoneman?
Yeah, certainly on the Amazon Fire Stick. I've never really tried the Google Chromecast, to be honest. But yeah, Apple TV and VoiceOver, in my experience, always pretty good, you know, always pretty rock solid. Obviously, third-party apps, it's always going to be a little bit inconsistent. There's always going to be updates that change things, and, you know, but I always feel that VoiceView, it's not bad by any stretch, but it just feels a little bit more, it often feels like it's needing to catch up with you a bit, whereas VoiceOver seems to be a bit more responsive in my experience.
Yeah, Apple had that touch-sensitive remote thing going on for a while, and yeah. I was very happy when that was updated and we got a sort of a slightly chunkier remote with more clicky buttons. I was glad that that changed. Elliot continues, though, and says that Voice Guide on his Samsung TV makes some apps, such as Netflix, Prime Video and Disney Plus, accessible, but some apps like BBC iPlayer aren't. Have you come across that, Callum?
Yeah, so I've got a Samsung TV as well. I'm not sure exactly what model it is. It's the TV we have in our bedroom, so it's just one of the kind of smaller, I think it's a 32-inch one, you know, one of the more basic models. We don't use it all the time. There is Voice Guide on that, and it's, you know, fine for Freeview, you know, just browsing your Freeview channels and browsing your TV guide. But the third-party apps, I've never found them to be that accessible with the screen readers built into the TVs. I mean, it's great that manufacturers are doing this, but I think the problem is Netflix, for example, are having to develop an app for Samsung, and then they might have to develop another one for Toshiba, and then you've got all the streaming boxes, and there's so many different platforms and screen readers that they've got to support, and I've just never found it to be that good, really. I always stick to the external ones, you know, something like the Apple TV for the third-party apps. I can't get Netflix to work on my Samsung as well, interestingly. I have heard that it's accessible, but it doesn't seem to be for me, and I'm on the latest updates and everything, but it's not happening. I open up Netflix and the voice guide just goes silent.
Elliot finally talks about Sky and how he has used the voice guidance on Sky Q, but 2 years after launch, he hasn't really seen much improvement. There are still areas where it doesn't talk, although he believes that it is coming to Sky Glass and Sky Stream. I know we looked at the voice guidance on Sky a little bit, and you looked at the similar offering on Virgin, Callum. Do you think, you know, these are a sort of valiant attempts, but actually you might be better off with something like an Apple TV for just all-round third-party app accessibility?
The best TV setup, in my opinion, is if you're interested in your Freeview channels or your subscription channels from something like Sky or Virgin, then you'll be fine for either built-in voice guidance on your TV for those channels and, you know, the built-in accessibility functions of whatever TV box you've got for your general live TV. But then I would always go with an Apple TV for something like streaming Netflix or streaming iPlayer in the third party apps. Or even if you're not bothered about, you know, live TV channels, then just get a really basic TV and plug an Apple TV into it. And you should be good to go there with pretty much perfect accessibility there as well.
Lots to think about. Let us know. What are you using to access TV and streaming content? What have you found to be the most accessible option for you? We'd love to know. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Stoneman and Elliot in Cloudy Pool, thank you very much. Now, if you were tuned in last week, you'll have heard about the project of the American Printing House for the Blind, a government-funded organisation in the United States, and Humanware, the world-renowned developer of assistive technology, including braille displays, and the National Federation of the Blind, their efforts to bring to market a device that promises to display multi-line braille and tactile graphics on a single refreshable surface. Well, we rejoin that conversation now with our friends Peter Tusek from Humanware and Greg Stilson from APH. And I began by asking where the name Monarch came from.
That's a great question. So this was from our friends at the National Federation of the Blind. Karen Anderson runs their education initiatives over there, and we were taking the device over to the National Federation of the Blind, who they're one of our equal partners in this project. And she took the device, she's a blind person, and she really specializes in teaching Braille, right? And so as she was reading it, her first words out of her mouth was, oh my gosh, I can use the butterfly reading method, which is, you know, using both hands, and as your right hand reaches the middle of the page, your left hand will drop to the next line while your right hand continues on reading. And then as it reaches the end, your left hand starts reading the next line, and your hands kind of meet in the middle. And when you look at somebody's hands doing it, it kind of looks like they're flapping butterfly wings is the idea. And as soon as we heard that, we're like, this is where we have much smarter people doing the marketing, Dave, than myself. My working title for this project was the dynamic tactile device, right? So they don't let people like me name products. So we turned it over to our great marketing people, and that's really where Monarch started.
And I guess that's why there were lots of little butterflies everywhere in Anaheim.
Exactly.
Something that will be new, as well as obviously the ability to handle all this braille and tactile graphics. Is this idea of a membrane over the display? Can either of you speak to that? What is it? Why is it? How do we look after it? Who changes it? Peter.
So certainly, you know, the membrane is something that when we bring out any technology, we do a lot of testing to ensure that that technology is going to stand up to the durable sort of use case. And especially in education, we know devices are going in and out of backpacks. You know, we all read with peanut butter and jelly fingers. We tend to treat our devices rather roughly. Whereas someone who maybe purchases a braille display or consumer certainly is going to take a lot of painstaking care at times to ensure that braille display does not get damaged in any way, shape, or form. And so when we were testing the cells, we found a tremendous improvement in performance when the cells were covered by a readable membrane. And I know, Dave, when we had sat down over a year ago at the CSUN conference, and when we had more of a demo box technology, a proof of concept, you could really feel that membrane. Whereas now with what you're feeling in the final product, again, I wasn't at CSUN this year with you, but you weren't going to be noticing the membrane as much. We've certainly refined how it's going to fit over the device, but we found that the performance of the cells is drastically improved when you are having that membrane over them. Now, as part of our demonstration, one of the benefits of having that membrane is we were able to, and it almost ended the meeting in horror because our Andrew Flatris, who is our Braille product manager, was able to pour a can of Coca-Cola directly onto the Braille cells as kind of the finale of our presentation of the technology and what we had kind of done with it. And this is not to say that we encourage anybody to do this, but the point being, it can protect, you know, the Braille cells from liquids and things like that. The membrane, you know, the added advantage, of course, is going to be that over time, you will be able to replace the membrane yourself. It is going to be user replaceable. We are still working out on exactly how many membrane units will ship with each device, but it will be user replaceable. Average sort of replacement time, and Greg, please jump in here if you know more than I believe we're looking at about a 6 month, 8 month ish kind of time before, with heavy usage, that membrane would need to be replaced. That doesn't mean it will have to be replaced, but it's general. Yeah, once per school year. And that would be something that is easily done by the user. It's a matter of just removing some anchor points and fitting that membrane in. It is a very snug fit, if you can imagine, because it needs to be extremely, you need to read Braille through it. It needs to be it needs to be entirely unnoticeable, which we found that it certainly is. So the membrane has a lot of added advantages. At its core, though, it is to protect the integrity of those cells.
Exactly. And one of the things that we did, so at the National Federation of the Blind convention last year, we did over 18 hours of testing with users with sort of these prototype boxes. And even with those boxes that were, I would say, suboptimal, right? Over 50% of the people who were testing with us didn't even notice the membrane. If I'm going to put it in relation to something, and I don't want this to sound negative because it's not meant to be, it's like thermoform braille if the thermoform wasn't sticky, if that makes sense. Because what you notice is, like, with thermoform, if you're reading thermoform and you've been reading it for a while and your fingers may get sweaty or something like that, your fingers stick to the thermoform. That's not the case here. You feel the pins totally clearly. It's more of a, if you're really checking, you can tell there's something there. And some people's fingers are just more sensitive than others. But like I said, over 50% of the folks that we tested with didn't even notice there was something between them and the braille cells.
I guess it's the equivalent to a screen protector that you might have on your smartphone or tablet.
From the physical side, the dimensions of the entire device will be equivalent to a 15-inch laptop. So one of the very first questions is, well, how big is this? It certainly is no tiny little device that'll fit in the palm of your hand. We were kind of went through an era of how small can your braille display be, right? That was something that went on for a little while. This certainly will be the standard dimensions of a gaming laptop. So it'll be about 4.8 pounds. It's going to be a 15, you know, fit in within that 15-inch laptop parameter. The device itself has a Perkins-style braille keyboard. So you will be able to certainly enter text and edit and do all of those things. You do have a couple of buttons that are situation, you know, that are uniquely placed for a reason. You have a cursor cross on either side of the array, either side of that braille tactographic display. The cursor cross allows you to move up, down, left, and right, and certainly you will find various needs to move your cursor around or control pieces with those buttons. But you also have a page up button on the left and a page down button on the right. That will advance or move your display width or pan that display width by a set number of lines that you determine. Now, when you rotate the device 180 degrees, so if you rotate the device, those buttons will work the same way. So your page up becomes page down and page down becomes page up, and you're able to read with the device in a 180 degree rotation, and therefore eliminate your need to reach over that Braille keyboard to do continuous reading. So that is another feature of the device. So we do have cursor crosses and page up and down buttons. There are dedicated zoom in and out buttons that are located above the Braille Perkins style Braille keyboard. And those will allow you, to zoom in or out or space both of Braille as well as spacing on multi-line text. You, on the very front of the device, have your standard Android buttons of home as your circle, your back button or triangle, and your menu or recent apps button, which is a square. The device also has an HDMI port for sending the visual display out to a monitor. And certainly what's interesting there is, in addition to seeing the Braille and the print, you also are able to see where someone's fingers are on the device, which can be very, very helpful for that teacher of the visually impaired to see where a student's finger placement is. We also have USB-C, which we're using for charging. That'll, to charge the device and certainly can have some other functionalities there. And there is a standard USB port as well.
We focus quite a lot on the pin technology, but let's have a bit of a rundown of some of the features. This has got a full Android operating system and software from Humanware. Can you just give us a description of some of the features and functions that users might find?
From a software perspective, this is running sort of a version of Humanware's Keysoft operating system, but it's very optimized for multi-line experience, right? So on the home menu or the main menu, when you arrive, the apps that are currently there now, and I'll kind of go through what we're expecting as time progresses here, is you have a Braille editor, which is sort of what you Braille is what you get. It's very similar. It's what we're trying to emulate, sort of the Perkins Brailler, if you will. So none of that is being translated into print, but if you want to work out some problems, take your notes, that is a multi-line Braille editor that can open up BRF or BRL files. And access that. There's a word processor, so very similar to the Humanware keyword word processor, optimized for multi-line Braille there as well. One of the very cool things is that we are going to be enhancing that word processor to allow for math to be, or as you say, maths to be edited or inserted right then and there in the word processor. So in the past, in the Braille Note line of products, you had to go to the Key Math application, do your workout product or problems there, and then paste them back into the keyword application. With this, it's going to be really designed around the multi-line approach, but you're also going to be able to switch into math mode and insert math directly right into the application itself. There will be a graphing calculator, so we are going to be optimizing the Desmos graphing calculator to be able to not only create these graphs so that you'll be able to feel the tactographic of the graph being created, but we're also creating a manual graph mode as well, where you'll be able to, using the touch sensors on the screen or on the Braille display screen, double tap in certain locations to plot your points manually. So oftentimes when we're learning about graphing and things like that, the blind student has to use, the physical graph paper with the taped off Cartesian plane lines to be able to stick on points right on the graph paper. And if your experience was anything like mine, by the time turned it into your teacher, all those points had fallen off. And so you never got properly graded on those.
Pins and elastic bands, I think, at my school.
Exactly. So so being able to plot those points, plot your graph, and then turn it into a PDF and either email it to your teacher or send it to them on a thumb drive or something like that, being able to do that as well. There will be, obviously, a book reader that's optimized for textbooks that will sort of combine with our tactile viewer application. So The book reader, obviously, it has access to many of the same libraries that you're familiar with HumanWare's book reader, being able to access the RNIB library and things like that, along with Bookshare and others. But if you are going to be using, in parallel, a lot of the work that we've been doing is to work with the DAISY Consortium to create a new type of electronic braille standard called the EBRF. And being able to access a properly formatted braille file, but sort of enhanced by the EPUB style of navigation.
I was trying to avoid going down that rabbit hole because I know that will be a whole other conversation and a great topic and something that we will be covering EBRF here on Tech Talk in the future. And it's just simply a way for braille and tactile graphics to play nicely together.
Absolutely, yep. So you'll use that in conjunction with the tactile viewer. And then, of course, we're going to be expanding out to having a web browser and an email client as well as time progresses. But that's basically where we are right now. I think the biggest difference, Dave, to have the listeners kind of understand is where the Android operating system for products like the Braille Note or for the HIMS products, the Braille Sense and things like that, is really a big feature. This product is very focused heavily on book access and tactile graphics and document creation and things like that. Our hope is that you use it for very task-oriented things, but our goal here is to really use the connections that we have with aspects like the tactile graphics image library to give you access to over 18,000 graphics on the device to be able to do the things you need to do in the classroom and things like that. And we'll continue to add on to it. The final thing I'll say is that HumanWare and APH are building a software development kit that we're excited to be able to get in the hands of development partners to create some apps and experiences that we haven't thought of yet.
What is the roadmap? Will you be doing some trials in schools?
So in January, part of sort of having the benefit of being federally funded here is that we're going to do something for the first time in probably APH's history, and that is before this product goes on sale and is publicly available, we're going to basically provide 200 teachers in the U.S. training. They're going to have to attend a couple-day seminar on how to teach this device. And when that seminar is complete, they're going to be receiving their own Monarch unit. And, you know, with that, there's going to be a commitment that they're going to be sort of the representatives of being able to teach this device. And they're going to teach others how to teach this device as well. So they're going to be creating curriculum content. They're going to be creating training material. They're going to be those folks who are coming up with the cutting edge instructional ways of what to do with this device. Because it is an entirely new experience. It's something entirely new to teach. And so it was very apparent early on that we had to make sure that we sort of had these monarch masters, if you will, that were experts at teaching this device. And so I'm really excited about this. It's also been something that's obviously been really well received by teachers because you know how it typically is, right? Your student gets a new tech device and the teacher never sees it again, right? And so with something this complex and this new, it was very important to us that these teachers are going to be equipped with the tool early and often before the kids even start to get access to it. So our goal, Dave, is to potentially, as we progress down, I would say, you know, supply chain willing, our goal is to have this product on sale by the end of 2024.
And then, Dave, if I may, just from our side, so the APH, you know, they will be doing very US-centric sort of training piece. HumanWare will be distributing and doing the product internationally. And we'll also be setting up and kind of launching and getting out a training sort of program that will be put in play next spring where we will be doing, think of them as workshop days or sort of training days for interested parties. That has not been finalized. We're kind of fleshing that out as we speak. But it will be, it's not going to perfectly align with what APH is doing based off of them just having a different, very, very different funding model. But we're going to be able to bring in and teach and make sure that our teachers are well aware of what it is that we do, much as we do with our current Braille products. So we do lots of workshops and certainly want to make sure that everyone is aware of what we have prior to having the device in the hands of their students. So it won't perfectly align, but we'll certainly have our own HumanWare flavored training program and that will be rolling out in markets outside of the United States.
Well, thank you so much both. I don't know who I was kidding. I thought we might get this done in 30 minutes, but clearly there's lots and lots for us to talk about and think about, and we'll be hearing more going forward. I'm very appreciative of you both joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio. For anyone who's interested, who wants to keep across some of these developments, what's the best way to do that?
So there's a couple ways. You can sign up for our announce list. If you just go to aph.org, you can search for Monarch and find our announce list. That is just a communication list that you can sign up for, that when we release information about the development, testing opportunities, all that kind of stuff, that'll show up on the announce list. You can also, any emails, you can email to DTD, Dynamic Tactile Device. This is an old email address, but it still works. DTD@aph.org.
Greg Stilson from APH and Peter Tusick from HumanWare, thanks very much for joining us here on Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks tremendously, Dave. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Dave.
And that brings us to the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for your company. And thank you, Callum Stoneman, for being back with us once again. It's good to have you around.
Yeah, it's gone quick this week.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Maybe everyone's listening on double speed, perhaps.
Yeah, especially sped us up on Audible.
All right. Okay. Well, we are out of here. Thank you so much for your company. Don't forget, of course, you can get in contact with us with any question about anything you've heard on the programme, or maybe a suggestion for something new. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. From myself, Dave Williams, and Callum Stoneman.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.